Hello, I am Jack Murtha.
And I am Tom Castles, coming to you with a very special episode of Databook today.
That's because it's also the HC Biz Show, the podcast dedicated to unraveling the business of healthcare. And I'm Don Lee, and this is a crossover podcast.
So if you haven't already, please be sure to rate, subscribe, and review Databook and the HC Biz Show. Check out these two podcasts, and obviously check us all out on social too.
So for one episode, which is being recorded at the HipMic conference that you know and love, the HC Biz Show and Databook are joining forces.
We're merging our health IT storytelling and interviewing powers, and it's all to take on a very big beast.
Amazon.
That's right. Today, HC Biz Show and Databook are analyzing Amazon's entrance into healthcare.
To tackle this issue, today we're going to bring on Christina Farr of CNBC and Shahid Shah, who you obviously know from this podcast, but is also an award-winning health IT thought leader.
But here's the thing. We're not really looking at whether it will succeed or fail.
No, we are not interested in analyzing every hire, every new project, every piece of premature evidence that we could use to build what would amount to a questionable prediction.
Instead, we're going to look at what's already here, right in front of us.
And that's people's opinions, their expectations for what Amazon might accomplish in healthcare simply, you know, because it's Amazon. And Amazon knows how to get stuff done.
But this blind faith, this hype, can it actually be harmful? And why does it exist in the first place?
Let's just say Amazon does succeed in fixing healthcare. What would that even look like? And how can we measure success if it's just based on a loose idea that Jeff Bezos is the business hero?
So that's what this episode's all about. The idea that, hey, we've got a super complex problem. We really struggle at being able to define what it is we even want to have happen. So what's the solution? Magic. And it just has to work.
It's called the silver bullet, and it's a pretty common phenomenon.
Time and again, across all sorts of industries and geographic areas, we see the silver bullet strike. I can even point to an example in my hometown, Buffalo, New York.
So, Don, let us set the stage.
Okay. So, it's the dawn of the new millennium. Like many once mighty industrial cities, Buffalo is trying to rebound from an economic downturn. Stakeholders from across the city and state are searching desperately for a way to return my town to its former glory.
We see this over and over again, and it typically looks something like this. We have a particular neighborhood, it gets targeted and then zoned for redevelopment. Then the government strikes deals with private entities and they start working on bringing in companies to take part in these really ambitious urban renewal projects.
And that's what's going on in Buffalo at this time. The powers that be start seeing huge potential in part of the inner harbor called Canalside. How powerful would a revitalized waterfront be? It could bring in money, attract young professionals, and make Buffalo a destination. It could change the city.
That sounds like a pretty reasonable plan.
No doubt. But here's where it gets unreasonable.
Here is where the silver bullet comes into the picture.
So how does Buffalo plan to pull off this waterfront revival? With a Bass Pro Shops store.
Are you kidding me?
No, you heard it right. All of a sudden, all of the city and state's efforts to fix the waterfront depend on one thing. Opening up a Bass Pro Shop. It's supposed to be a destination, complete with a parking garage, a restaurant inside the store, really fancy stuff. And leaders consider Bass Pro this anchor, a tenant that will attract the masses and inspire other companies to invest in hotels, offices, retails, and restaurants. This one store is somehow going to be the bread and butter of Buffalo.
Forgive me, but this just seems so absurd. Like the thought of a single retailer, a chain, nonetheless, ushering in a revolution. I mean, it's out there.
Right, but that's not how Buffalo sees it. In fact, the Canalside project is slated to cost $300 million. And officials agree to set aside $35 million in taxpayer funds for the construction of the store and another $40 million for parking and infrastructure.
There it is, the silver bullet.
So it's in the works for years. In 2010, the head of the Economic Development Committee even says this.
Quote, "We created this image that it's all about Bass Pro, but it is, We need them.
Quote, we don't have a plan B. Just thinking about how many times I've said that and how it turned out. Why don't we have a plan B? Because there is not another major tenant opportunity in this country willing to come to Buffalo. End quote.
And guess what? In July 2010, after years of tense back and forth, Bass Pro Shop finally pulls out of the deal.
So let's fast forward to today. It's 2019. Buffalo's waterfront must look pretty underwhelming, Don. Am I right in making this wild, uninformed assumption?
Well...
Oh, come on.
Well, no. You'd be very much incorrect. You see, it turned out that the Canalside project did not hinge on the arrival of Bass Pro Shops. If you look at the area today, it's a whole new world from what it was in 2002.
So what's it like?
Honestly, it's pretty amazing. It's got the hotels, the offices, countless restaurants and shops, all those things that they were hoping for. There's festivals, community events. It's a place where young people want to go and live, where people make a lot of memories and even make some money. And here's the thing. The dam really broke after Bass Pro Shops' idea fell through. When that happened, there was all this pent-up energy, and it morphed into hundreds of smaller projects, and the people of Buffalo ended up rebuilding Buffalo.
So this is a pretty great little story. So first, it says a lot about your community, Don, where you're from, and your resilience, too. But I think there's something larger at play here.
Yeah, I think it's this realization that the silver bullet might not actually be the silver bullet. I mean, rarely does a single neat packaged solution wipe out a puzzling problem. It's almost never that simple.
But we do tend to fall for the mirage. We want it to work. And Jack, just the other day, I sent you a link to a story about Twitter founder Jack Dorsey's diet. Do you remember that?
Yes, I definitely do, Don.
So the one line that stuck out to me was the question, why do we care about Silicon Valley's eating habits? And basically what the writer concluded was, hey, they've changed so much about our lives and the world. Maybe they also have a secret to changing our bodies.
So maybe these folk are the silver bullet. If you can't tell, I'm a little obsessed with silver bullet. My uncle is a werewolf, so I'm just trying to...
Now that's ridiculous.
Yeah, just like how ridiculous it is that the Segway, you know, the thing you see mall cops riding around on, that the Segway was going to change how we physically move every day. Or, you know, another example, how Theranos held the key to magically improving blood testing.
It was all hype, and a lot of us ate it up like we had not eaten in years.
So that brings us back to Amazon's charge into healthcare. And the question, are we doing the same thing? Are we looking at Amazon the same way that the leaders in Buffalo looked at Bass Pro Shops?
Now, maybe it sounds a little bit less ridiculous to position Amazon as the savior than it does to do that for Bass Pro Shops. But is it really?
It's tough to say. I mean, they were going to have a fishing tournament and everything. It was going to be a big deal. But the truth is, Bass Pro Shops in Buffalo, it seemed like a good fit. It had worked well as an anchor tenant in some other places, and the demographics were right. Amazon, meanwhile, knows processes, automation, and innovation. And Bezos has done so many things, and he's done them really well.
And healthcare, well, let's be honest, guys. We are begging for a savior. Until this point, at least, we've been stumped at how to overcome deep systemic challenges surrounding pretty much everything. You know, the economics, outcomes, you name it.
Silver bullet sounds pretty good right about now.
But I think the question is, why do we think Amazon has the answer? Or why do you think Amazon is the answer? And what could be the negative effects of that kind of thinking?
And maybe the belief that Amazon could be the savior of healthcare is just flat out unfounded.
And maybe, just maybe, the silver bullet is blocking our own sort of waterfront revival.
So we're talking with Christina Farr, who, as I'm sure most of you already know, is a technology and health reporter from CNBC.com based out of San Francisco. Christina, thanks for taking a minute to talk with us today.
Thanks for having me. having me. Excited to chat.
Amazon has been getting a ton of attention over the last year, really. And that all started in a big way, I'd say, around the announcement of what's now called Haven, going back about a year. When that announcement was made, it seemed like the industry really kind of went nuts about this story and about this Amazon's entrance. There's really a lot more to it, too. Behind that is there's the acquisition of PillPack, the recent announcements of HIPAA compliance for Alexa, the recent announcement of accepting HSAs. So there really is a lot going on there. In your coverage and all the time that you've spent talking with folks around this and, you know, just your perception of these stories, do you think any one part of what Amazon's doing is driving most of the attention they're getting? Or is it really that overall look at all of these things?
You know, on this question of whether Amazon deserves the attention, I mean, I think it really depends. One of the things you mentioned was Haven. And Haven is the employer-focused group with a couple other companies, Berkshire Hathaway and JP Morgan. And I think that so far has been where the bulk of attention has been. But in my mind, I would say that where the more interesting projects are happening and also the more secretive projects are within Amazon itself. So I kind of think that warrants a bit more attention than it's been getting. Whereas on the Haven front, I don't know that that's necessarily the sort of key to how Amazon thinks about healthcare and what they'll do going forward.
Interesting. So you think that Haven's getting the attention in general, but maybe isn't the thing that everybody should be thinking about. Is that a fair way to rephrase?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, so far, at least, it seems like Amazon has been the least involved or at least the most public company among the three talking on behalf of Haven. You've seen Jamie Dimon kind of out there at different conferences. At JP Morgan this year, the big healthcare conference, he was meeting with groups of pharma CEOs and really making the case for why we need to improve the whole drug supply chain and what employers can do. So he's certainly been out there. And Warren Buffett was, you know, in the press talking about healthcare as a hungry tapeworm. Whereas we haven't seen Bezos or Amazon really say anything very much about their involvement with Haven and why they think they want to fix healthcare costs. But that has been the focus of much of the attention so far.
That's really interesting. I hadn't really thought about that because you don't hear anyone saying, oh, JP Morgan's going to disrupt healthcare like you do Amazon all the time. What do you think it is about Amazon that's making people kind of jump to that proclamation that, no, this is going to happen. If Amazon's involved, it's healthcare will be disrupted. What do you think it's drawing people to that Haven project and specifically to Amazon within it?
It's a really great question. It's one that I've thought a lot about. And you know, I definitely would say that on the Haven front, it was Amazon's participation that definitely got people talking. If it had been, you know, a different set of companies, it may just have been viewed as yet one more employer health consortium, because there have been others in the past that have formed. But if you think about Amazon specifically, like, and all the things that they're good at, so drugs, the supply chain, for instance, is a big one. The logistics piece of it, they are amazing at making deliveries. They know exactly what they're doing from a supply chain and logistics standpoint. And beyond that, they put the consumer first. Most people who use Amazon would say that it is a really great consumer experience. Meanwhile, if you look at healthcare, I would say terrible at supply chain and logistics in many cases. And you can think of some great examples of that within the drug supply chain. A total lack of transparency and really kind of often a lack of consumer focus as well. So I think people come in and they see, you know, when they're doing their overviews of the space, they see a company like Amazon as really being potentially very disruptive in this sector.
Oh, that's really good. Now, of the people that you talk to and you hear from and you see that are looking to Amazon and are looking at for all those reasons you just described, how would you describe their perception of where this is going? Are people generally optimistic, hopeful, pessimistic? How would you classify them, or could you classify, you know, the industry's perception as a whole?
Yeah, it's really interesting, because I think privately people in the industry have, you know, a set of ideas and views, and then publicly it's a completely different one, at least from what I can tell. So publicly, a lot of companies within healthcare have come out and said in earnings calls and in interviews that they don't really see Amazon as a threat. healthcare is too complicated and they don't think that Amazon could necessarily grok it. And you've heard that sentiment shared across many of the large pharmacy chains, as well as some of the distributor companies. So I think that's the sort of public sentiment so far. Privately, I think there are, you know, alarm bells being raised. And whenever Amazon takes a step, one recent example was to introduce the health savings account or flexible savings account for its members so that you could use those dollars to buy healthcare products on Amazon. And that's actually a very complicated thing to do on the back end. So I would say that things like that definitely were a cause for alarm and made it seem like, you know, potentially one piece of a larger Amazon healthcare strategy.
Okay. And I could see certainly on the publicly when you're talking to investors and things like that, wanting to downplay Amazon and talk about how you have in control. But when you hear the rumblings in private settings, what is it specifically that people are concerned about Amazon doing or concerned about Amazon disrupting from a hospital business model or pharmacy business model?
I mean, it totally depends on the company that you ask. If you're, say, a GPO, you would probably be worried about the Amazon business side of the house because Amazon has already started selling supplies to medical offices, dental offices, and so on. So, you know, you could totally imagine them wanting to get some of those larger hospital type contracts. If you're talking to one of the pharmacy chains, I think the big threat is that Amazon will expand PillPack, the company that it acquired last year, to do a lot more around drug delivery. And I think the bigger, more threatening idea is that a lot of healthcare will move to the home and that Amazon could facilitate that. If you're a retail chain with a bunch of brick and mortar stores, that's the last thing you want because you want people to come into your store and not just buy their prescription medicines, but also all the other stuff that you have stacked on the aisles, you know, your toothpaste or your aspirin. So I think that's a big threat from their end. And beyond that, I mean, you know, on the employer side, I think Amazon could do a lot if they really, you know, invested with Haven, depending on what the strategy could be. But you could see them kind of experimenting with their own employees first with, say, tools that would encourage more price transparency in healthcare or more transparency around physician quality. And from there, you could see them expanding it out to the broader market of consumers.
Gotcha. Now, that is the detailed inside look from the folks that really know the business and the ones that do stand to be directly impacted by it. How about the broader public view of all of this? And, you know, what are you hearing from the industry observers or just generally it's not really the general public that's paying attention to this type of stuff per se, but the people that aren't directly going to be impacted by this, but just the general observer of healthcare industry, what is the perception you're seeing there? Are they kind of following that company public sentiment where it's not going to matter too much, or are they more aligned with the private concerns where, no, Amazon might actually have a big impact?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I think I would say I've seen kind of two big threads or themes among the general consumer audience. The first one is really just Amazon, please come in and do something. And that's especially among people who've had very negative experiences with the healthcare system, and they don't understand why everything needs to be so complicated. I mean, I think there is a general desire to have things be much easier. And there have been surveys that have shown that people would embrace using a service like Amazon Prime for their prescription medicine delivery. Were that to be made available to them. So that's kind of the first one. The second is this fear around privacy if Amazon were to get more involved with the healthcare sector. There have been some reports recently that, you know, Amazon Alexa might be listening to people, which is kind of a scary idea if you imagine that they have goals and a strategy for the healthcare business. I mean, nobody wants their sensitive healthcare information to be shared with any third party without their knowledge or consent. So I definitely think that if Amazon wants to get more involved in this space, that they'll need to come out finally and tell us what they want to do and how they're going to go about doing that. And just really kind of help consumers understand that their data, their healthcare data especially, will be under lock and key.
And then given that I'm coming to you and I'm asking you a lot of these questions, and the basis of the story we're working on here is around the public's perception of Amazon. I feel like a lot of times people are looking at this and they're almost blindly saying, we just need a savior to come in and fix this for us. And I think sometimes we get this, there's this sense that maybe Amazon could do that, or maybe the tech giants or Silicon Valley could do that for us. Do you agree with that sentiment? Is that, am I looking at through my own kind of filter and applying that myself? Or do you think that sentiment's out there? Is the industry looking for somebody to come and save it? Or at least are the consumers looking for someone to come and save it?
It's such an interesting question. And, you know, I would say that I am definitely seeing that sentiment on the consumer side. People just don't understand why only within the healthcare context that they have no idea how much a procedure or a visit is going to cost before they get the bill. So just even at that level, I mean, there's just a desire to kind of fix that and many other aspects of the healthcare system that just seems so broken from the consumer standpoint. Beyond that, I would also say the employers are definitely looking for a savior. And when I go to some of these employer conferences, I've started to hear just increasing animosity on the part of these benefits teams that, you know, they just feel like they, you know, they've gotten the sort of wrong end of the stick, that they are being treated very unfairly, and that, you know, employers are spending more and more and more every year, and they're just not getting these outcomes that they should be. So there's definitely a lot of fed up type sentiment that we're hearing, and this idea around Silicon Valley being a savior is very real. I do have some questions about whether Silicon Valley will swoop in and do the right thing. I think some companies certainly will, and some founders have their heart in the right place. But, you know, Silicon Valley isn't just an altruistic place. People are out here to try to make money.
Right.
And I think very often, you know, I meet with businesses where they say, oh, my business model is to do X, Y, and Z. And then you kind of probe a little bit deeper, and it seems very clear that how they make money is by essentially propping up the existing system and finding just some way to insert themselves in the middle of a process that already has too many players that are taking money out of the system without, you know, providing much in return. So I think we should be very questioning of that. That said, though, I do think that a company like Apple may end up just being a general force for good, because this is a company that actually does not have an incentive, at least, you know, for the foreseeable future, in selling our data, while other companies may. So, you know, it's possible that they will continue to do good work. And I really like the effort that they have underway around health records and aggregating that data for people, because there is actually like a need for it. And that felt like something that for now they're just doing as a consumer service without really anything in return. So I think there are some really good examples already of Silicon Valley doing good, but we certainly shouldn't just, you know, accept this idea that anything that a tech company does will be better than an incumbent.
Great. It was awesome to meet you after all this time. I've been following you forever on Twitter and, you know, on the web, just reading your stuff. So keep up the great work. I appreciate it. And it was awesome to talk with you today.
Yeah, same to you. Thank you so much.
All right, Christine, have a great afternoon. Bye.
Bye.
So to follow up Christina Farr, we are welcoming Shahid Shah, who is an award-winning health IT leader. He's a publisher and all-around respected figure in the industry. So welcome to Databook and HC Biz Show, Shahid.
Hey, Jack. Good to see you again, I guess virtually.
So today we're talking about the perception of Amazon and other tech giants that are entering healthcare. And I just want to start with this. What is the prevailing perception, and how does that differ across the industry?
Well, from the outside, Amazon is, of course, seen as the world's largest store of any kind, right? So if you ever want to buy almost anything from anyone, you could go onto Amazon, search for it, and if you were seeking something out, somebody would probably be selling it and you could buy it. So that perception is actually very good. I mean, they're almost approaching $1 trillion in value, tons and tons of money they make every year, but not a whole lot of it is in healthcare. So when they made the announcement in early 2018, the announcement with JP Morgan, Berkshire Hathaway, and Amazon, the three of them getting together and announcing at the JP Morgan Investor Conference in January 2018, that they were going to enter healthcare together. And because these are three employers together, they have probably a little over north of a million employees, they could in theory have some buying power with respect to the employer side. And of course, they have huge influencing power from the idea of investor, holding company, and a company like Amazon, which is in retail, digital of all kinds. So once they did that, the perception started to really go amok. You know, people were saying, oh my goodness, they're going to be able to do a lot in here. Are they going to write a new EHR? Are they going to put pharmaceutical companies out of business? Will pharmacy benefits management people get disrupted? Almost none of that is going to happen anytime soon. So most of that is rumor, and it's basically way outside the realm of possibility given regulatory impacts in the United States. However, very recently, they did get a CEO. So this new company that has been formed with the triumvirate, including Amazon, now has a CEO. That CEO is none other than Atul Gawande, who, if you read a book called Checklist Manifesto and others, he's a doctor, knows the space reasonably well, not exactly from the entrepreneurial class, but certainly an operator and a expert in the business. So now, given that there was an institution created, you have a CEO, now this gets a little bit more real. And so the Amazon part of this triumvirate of the three companies that started this really is going to be surrounding primarily the buying and selling of goods initially, cloud, because that's the company, that's where the company is today, and a whole lot of services that most people don't even know that Amazon is into. But right now, the rumors are going amok, and almost none of it is true.
All right, but are we facing any real dangers from just the thought itself? Could the perception affect innovators or even hospitals?
Not really. And the reason for that is that healthcare is very, very slow to move for obvious reasons, you know, low risk tolerance, et cetera. So going with an Amazon, while it is cool sounding, is not something that supply chain manufacturers or supply people at hospitals or other places are waiting for Amazon. They know that, you know, if Amazon were to enter, margins will be better, supply will be better, perhaps. So they're willing to, I think, jump on more quickly than we would imagine. But I don't think anyone, certainly not on the non-innovator space, is waiting. On the innovator side, there's a little short-sightedness with innovators. Any innovator that says, well, I'm not going to do something because Amazon might come in, probably is not offering something unique enough or innovative enough anyway. So that kind of thinking doesn't really bother me. It's just, so if you're not that bright and you're saying that, oh, I would do this, except Amazon might kill me, you're kidding yourself or your investors. You're not that bright. You're not going to be creating something innovative. The one that really is opportunistic here, though, is if you have innovative ideas, whether or not Amazon might enter, you jump into it, because competition in innovation actually doesn't exist, because it's innovation. It's new. Competition starts to exist when you start, you begin to market your innovation in ways that sound alike to many other products that might be out there. So that's a little different. The real opportunity, I think, here absolutely is that imagine that Amazon was coming in. Now imagine, just like before Amazon came into data centers with Amazon AWS, everybody thought, well, you know, innovation is gone, data centers will go away, et cetera. There's been more innovation in the cloud through containers and automated deployments and DevOps. All of this stuff came out, even though Amazon has replaced many, many data centers. So the innovators will innovate because they're innovators. The non-innovators will complain and be worried for no reason. And so I'm not actually that worried about them. But what now imagine that if you were building a Epic or Cerner today, you would not do it in the same way that we did it 20, 30 years ago. You would do it literally cloud first, mobile first, patient first, et cetera, and build things on top of these well-known platforms. Imagine the next generation DME, the next generation PBM, the next generation health information exchange, the next generation anything. Pick anything with the next generation word in front of it, and it will be built on the cloud, on Amazon, AWS, Microsoft Azure, et cetera. And now on the supply side, imagine if all of your supply chain problems were resolved by Amazon, how would your services, how would your capabilities in the healthcare business improve because of them? So to me, I'm the opposite. I'm much less concerned about Amazon impacting innovation. I think an Amazon-like entry, which frees us from the tyranny of the supply chain and how woefully inadequate it is, and how hard it is to get these regulated devices and regulated products to each other, that removal of tyranny of the bad supply chain will give us kinds of innovation that we cannot even imagine today. So I've got much more optimistic glasses on that one.
So you just alluded to this, and it's kind of been going on throughout the conversation, but I want to expand on that answer, Shahid. What does this say about the state of the industry and how it's making its people feel? You know, this idea that people want and almost need to look at outside tech companies as potential healthcare disruptors.
Yeah, I think what we're saying about the state of the industry is that the vertical players, let's call them, for lack of a better word, the ones in healthcare, we'll call them vertical industry players, are not innovating fast enough. But the reason for that often is vertical players understand their regulatory pressures so well that they feel there's no way to get around it. So, for example, if you were the taxi business for decades and you had enormous amounts of regulation on your taxi business, you couldn't possibly imagine an Uber-like scenario because the Uber hadn't disrupted the regulatory part of your business yet. Now, same analogy, when Uber came in and others came in, they have to break the law for a little while. Rules have to be broken, laws have to be broken in order to make massive progression on innovation. In fact, there's a nice article in MIT's Sloan Review a couple of years ago. I believe the title of the article was, your regulatory strategy is your innovation strategy. Meaning, if you're not willing to break the law, and break the law, and not in this case of like killing someone, but going around regulatory moats as they are, you're not going to be able to innovate as much as if you're willing to, quote, break the rules, break the law. Now, in healthcare, breaking the law often entails going to jail. So there's not going to be a whole lot of people inside the industry that are like, oh yeah, I got some great ideas. Let me go around HIPAA. Let me go around here. Let me go around there. So those kind of problems often cannot be resolved by an industry which is policing itself or is being policed by regulations internally. It takes the outsiders to be able to come in with scale and say, look, I don't really care about these rules. I'm going to apply my business to this area, to an adjacency, and, you know, a very typical classical Clayton Christensen disruption model, which is you don't go for the heart of the regulation, you go to an adjacency. And then the adjacency starts nibbling and nibbling and nibbling and nibbling from the bottom and coming into the industry. So a horizontal player it can do that easier. So, for example, before Amazon AWS wrote up its HIPAA regulations back in 2007 or 8, I believe, people were still using AWS in the cloud for HIPAA-compliant use cases, but Amazon wouldn't officially support it. So it took enough of them to be able to say, okay, now HIPAA Omnibus is going to be applicable to Amazon AWS as well. So the horizontal players always can do this, especially the horizontal innovators. But the vertical guys on the industry side know how to apply their services business to those horizontal plays. So the horizontal industry here the vertical industry side in healthcare has a huge advantage. If they would recognize that the horizontal infrastructure disruption is inevitable, it's not, you shouldn't even wonder whether it's coming, should it come, is it good, is it bad? No, just assume that the horizontal infrastructure change is inevitable. Now, how do you adapt your moat? What are you good at? We're good at services, we're good at humans, we're good at the tech plus humans capability. Putting it on top of these new modern infrastructure, that's actually going to change the game. So I'm not that worried that it will take a horizontal player to come change the vertical players in healthcare, because it's the only thing that ever does in any other industry.
Shahid Shah, thank you so much for joining us today.
It was my pleasure. Love this conversation. Let's do it again.
All right. So that is going to do it for this very special crossover episode of the HC Biz Show and Databook. Please, if you don't subscribe to one of these podcasts already, go ahead and do it. We have nothing but respect for you, Don, and what you do. And we're so thankful that you agreed to merge worlds, if only for an episode.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. And thank you guys for making me flex my creative muscle a little bit. I'd say your show is a little bit closer to what I would do if I could put about twice as much time into my show that I currently put into it. So kudos to you guys. I love the format. And it was fun to do this with you.
Thanks, Tom.
Really appreciate your time, Don. Also really enjoyed the rosemary chicken we had at lunch today. It was delicious.
That was good. As was that skirt steak.
Skirt steak was delicious too, yeah.
All right, from Hitmic 2019, goodbye.
Bye-bye.
See ya.